And stay tuned for Mark Levine. He'll be up next on WEAC Radio.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, and with me on the line is...
Terry D. Kester, and it's not evening yet, thank heavens.
Did I say evening?
You did. You scared the heck out of me. I thought the whole Earth has just slipped off its axis.
I don't know, Terry. Maybe you just slept really, really late.
It could be. It could be.
And waiting for us somewhere, God knows where, is Garland Nixon. It was supposed to be on now, but, well...
Well, Garland, you know, he wanders intellectually and physically, and, you know, he's probably somewhere out there in the ether.
Well, he probably is, and we do expect him to call in any moment. But if not, Terry and I are more than competent to go on without him.
You bet. You bet.
So, Terry, I've got, I want to talk about Supreme Court rulings this week.
Yep.
Obviously, the bombshell, of course, is the overturning of the Defense of Marriage Act.
They did. My marriage is over. My anniversary today. You mean this is the end of my marriage?
Is it really your anniversary today?
It really is. It really is.
Well, congratulations to you and Jan. You've been married 312 years,
something like that. It gets lost, you know.
It is hard because it's before records were available.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
just the carving on the stone wall, you know, in the cave wall.
Well, congratulations. I got to tell you, she doesn't look near as old as you do. So.
thanks, Mark. Really know how to hurt an old man.
You know, maybe you look 25 and she looks 22. I didn't say.
Yeah,
It's all relative.
Right.
It's all relative.
Part of my paranoia.
Well, we'll find out whether your marriage is indeed destroyed, because there are those who think that is true. I want to talk about that, and of course the failure of Proposition 8 in California. Give you all the legal stuff. And by the way, following this, the Inside Scoop, we're going to get a full 2 hours. Go through the Supreme Court decisions and describe exactly what they said and what they mean for the future. So please don't miss that at the end of the Raucous Caucus. We're going to go through that. But also, I want to talk about the Voting Rights Act, because it's really horrific, it seems to me, that one day before a great move in favor of civil rights was a great one of the greatest attacks on civil rights, at least in the last 50 years. We'll talk about that, and maybe even the affirmative action case, depending on how much time we have. And then you want to take us to garbage.
Garbage.
You want to take us from these supreme, important civil rights issues and talk literally about trash.
Yeah, well, it's called, you know, a reality check. I know it's not something that Americans really want to do. They'd rather be ideological.
You know, I'm just tired of you talking trash all the time. I think, sorry, that had to be said. That just had to be said. Go ahead. Tell us about trash.
Do you want to hear about that now?
Well, no, just the brief synopsis.
The brief thing is China has changed its entire policy, and most of our trash goes to China. And China has said, no, sorry, it's called green fence, and you can't ship your trash here anymore. And this is an economic and an environmental crisis that most people aren't even aware of.
Interesting. I'm sure we can find some poor, more mistreated third world country to dump our trash.
Mississippi,
Bangladesh. There's a lot common between the two. All right, we will get to your talking trash in the latter part of the broadcast. I promise. We will go there.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about the Supreme Court this week, because
scary.
Well, it's scary and it's hopeful and it's all of the above. I have to say, I did predict, blow my own horn here, I did predict that this outcome. I thought the Defense of Marriage Act would be overturned. What this act was, of course, for those of you who may not be aware what DOMA is, in 1996, before any state of the United States allowed...
I thought it was a new flavor of ice cream.
DOMA? Well, yeah. What flavor would that be?
Well, it's sort of a grape thing mixed, you know, with cookie dough.
You have a fervid imagination.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt. I'm just worried about my marriage being dissolved now by DOMA.
I understand. Grape and cookie dough? I just I don't know. I don't think it'll sell. I'm just saying. Anyway. I'll have two scoops of DOMA and one scoop of Pepto-Bismol.
Right.
All right. So where were we?
I don't know.
The Defense of Marriage Act was passed in 1996, basically what it said was that once a state allows same-sex marriage, and it was contemplated that would happen because Hawaii started to do something in '93 that then didn't succeed because there was a constitutional amendment to stop it, but they knew it was coming, and in fact it did come in with Massachusetts in 2003. But they said once that happens, even though the state will recognize your marriage, even though the state will treat gay couples equally with straight couples, with all the rights and benefits accruing under state law, they're not going to allow the exact same couples to have the same rights under federal law. What they said, in effect, is there's about 2,000 benefits and rights and privileges and responsibilities that come with the institution of marriage. About 1,000 are at the state level, about 1,000 are at the federal level. The state level would be things like state tax returns or, rights to have children, domestic rights, rights to divorce, things like that. Also, who takes care of the kids. Okay. And then federal level would be things like Social Security benefits, federal income tax returns, the federal estate tax, Medicaid, Medicare, federal programs, et cetera. So people don't usually separate those two in their mind because they go together.
That's crucial.
In fact, Medicaid is one of those programs. It's a federal program implemented by the state. So
yeah.
To try to say, well, you're married under the state component of a federal-state partnership, but not under the federal component of a federal-state partnership, leads at the very least to confusion. And, of course, at the very most, to blatant second-tier citizenship, which is exactly what the Supreme Court called it. Justice Kennedy joined with the four liberals on the court. I have to say, I did predict it this way, and mostly because Justice Kennedy, and I strongly disagree with him when it comes to things like Obamacare, for example, where he voted that it was unconstitutional. Kennedy is the libertarian justice. He's not a conservative. People talk about liberals and conservatives. Of course, libertarians are half conservative, half liberal. Liberals believe that the government shouldn't get in our way with our private lives, but should help us where it can in the public sphere, getting a job, getting an education, and so forth. Conservatives believe the government should intervene in our private lives, should tell us who to marry, should censor us, our books, should tell us what religion to practice.
And most importantly, do not help us in any way in terms of education,
exactly.
Healthcare, anything else.
Exactly.
Through us is basically their ideology.
That's exactly right. But libertarians are in the middle. They say the government shouldn't get in our way in our private lives, and then that way they agree with liberals. But they also say that government shouldn't help us in all the ways that you just mentioned, Terry, education and workforce and so forth. And in that respect, they agree with conservatives. So basically, they don't want any government whatsoever. We might call them anarchists. But libertarians, though, are half right. And when it comes to not interfering in the private sphere, for example, libertarians agree with liberals on things like the right of gay couples to marry, but also in lessening the drug war, that marijuana laws shouldn't be, people shouldn't be punished for their private choices.
And one of the biggest tragedies in our political atmosphere is that progressives and libertarians do not really take advantage of, and I think it's primarily because of progressives, do not take advantage of the things where we do agree.
Right. We do agree with them on a lot of things. So, for example, when it comes to government censorship, when it comes to being opposed to government spying on us and civil liberties, things like that. So when it comes to protecting our private lives and our freedom to practice our religion, the freedom to marry the person we choose, many libertarians, for example, are pro-choice on abortion because it comes down to a woman's private body and they just don't want government interference. So there are many things libertarians and liberals agree on. We'll fight the libertarians when they want to cut aid to education, they want to cut minimum wage. We disagree with them on that. They agree with conservatives. But we do agree with them on half the things. And that is to say that Justice Kennedy, who really is more of a libertarian than a conservative, does agree with basic civil rights. Now, he does agree with the Civil Rights Act. We'll get to that. Go ahead.
Isn't he the one, which is one of the things I used the word scary at the very beginning, because, he is the pivot in almost every decision, is he not?
Almost, but not all of them. Let me give you the clearest example. Obamacare. Kennedy voted with the conservatives, and it was Chief Justice Roberts that voted with the liberals to find it constitutional. It is rare. He is the most pivotal justice.
And if we lose, if he dies or if any of them die or have to be replaced for whatever reasons, without that pivotal person, unless a progressive to some degree or libertarian at least gets in, it could really get bad.
That's true. Obviously, it depends on who's president. One of the arguments
who's going to get confirmed.
Well, that's true, too. But, I've long made the argument for those that say, the Democrats and Republicans are the same, is if you want to condemn the Democrats as being imperfect, I'm on board with you. If you want to condemn all the ways in which, for example, Obama is spying on us, I'm with you. I hated it when Bush did it. I hate it when Obama does it. Democrats are far from perfect, but never, ever say they are equal to the Republicans. And the clearest example is Supreme Court justices.
Supreme Court.
Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan.
And court of- and appeals courts around the country.
Exactly. I mean, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan, both appointed by President Obama, have been solid, good votes on all kinds of progressive principles. Just up there with Clinton's two appointees, Justice Breyer, Justice Ginsburg, the five appointees appointed by Republican presidents, of course, as we just talked about, have been largely bad. Although Kennedy, when it comes to gay rights, Kennedy was actually he was the swing vote in Lawrence v. Texas, which is a vital decision, which said basically you have the right to have sex between consenting adults. Before 2003, 10 years ago. Really, I mean, I'm not near as old as you are, Terry Kester.
Well, no.
Even to me, 2003 seems recent. But as long ago as 2003, it was a felony in my home state of Virginia for people, and by the way, it wasn't just gay people, it included straight people, married couples, man and wife, to have oral sex. It was
a
felony.
But don't despair, because Cuccinelli, is that his name? I keep on messing his name up.
Cuccinelli.
Cuccinelli, yes. Cuccinelli wants to restore that.
Yes, he does. He wants to restore sodomy laws.
Yes,
yes.
He really does.
You can just call him Cuccinelli, and that's how you remember his name.
Yeah, Cuccinelli. I like that, yes. He really is.
That's an easy way to remember his name. And, of course, many of you know there is an election in Virginia this November. This station is heard throughout Northern Virginia right here, We Act Radio. Please, please do not forget to vote. This is a great, great little public service here that you brought up, Terry. This November, I got to tell you, Virginia and New Jersey, the only states in the United States that do elections on the odd years. I don't like it. I wish we could move back to even years, because what happens is you find a whole large group of progressives come out every 4 years to vote for the president. You find young people and African-Americans, Latinos, and a lot of the Democratic coalition come out every 4 years. And that's why Virginia voted for Obama twice in his two presidential elections. But unfortunately, they often stay home the odd numbered years when it comes to Virginia elections. And really urge
to
come out and vote this November.
One thing that should inspire them on that is just the realization that the lobbyist organizations these days are actually concentrating more or as much on states than they are on the federal issues. Because the federal issues, they've got them in their pocket to a larger degree. And the lobbyists have just taken over state governments as well and are trying to. And it's really crucial to understand that.
There's a reason also, because people don't usually know who their state representatives are.
Yeah.
You ask anyone in the United States who the president is, and 99% are going to be able to name the president.
Maybe 83%.
No, the president, they know. That's a name they know. When you ask them their senators or their members of Congress, you might go immediately down to 50%. You might even be lucky to get 50%. I don't know. When you go down to state officials, the name of their governor, what, 40%? The name of their state legislators, I would dare say not 10% of Americans know the name of who represents them in the state house.
But they do know who's the quarterback on whatever team they're interested in. And they do know who's defensive end. They really pay attention to the big issues.
Yes, and they've heard of the name Kardashian, which is a name that I will not state with any further context on this show. So here's the thing. But state rights matter, and they affect your life. Frankly, about three-quarters of the laws that affect your life are state laws, not federal laws. And, of course, in the Virginia. Oh, look, we've got a caller on the line. Let's see if Garland is arriving late to the broadcast.
Garland
here.
Who?
Garland Nixon, is that you, sir?
Yes, sir, it is.
Do you have a watch? You got a clock? I mean, it's 13 minutes after the hour. I mean, I don't know. Do you just saunter in whenever you want? Is that the deal?
It was Terry's fault.
Okay, Terry, why'd you do that to Garland?
Thank you. Yes, I've been tapping Garland's phones. I actually have a contract with the NSA and to just watch over Garland.
I see.
I've been watching over, and I've told the NSA Garland is no threat whatsoever.
Terry wanted some extra talk time, so I think he jammed my phone.
I see. All right. Well, stop fighting amongst yourselves here. So, Garland, we're talking about Supreme Court decisions, and then later on, Terry literally wants to talk trash. I thought that was only in basketball games, but apparently he does want to talk trash.
Garbage.
So my point was, where did I make my point here? People don't know what goes on at the state level. We've been going all over the place, and we moved into the Virginia elections.
But we are focused,
and one of our focuses is that the guy running for governor of Virginia in an election this November 2013, that's right, Virginians, do not forget to vote this November, actually wants to bring back sodomy laws, which, as I remind our audience, ban oral sex between any consenting adults, including between married couples. So
has it come out from Cuccinelli? Has it come out yet where his wife stands on this?
I haven't, and I think she needs to be asked whether or not the
yes,
two of them have ever committed sodomy, i.e. had oral sex. Because, look, normally I wouldn't go in and ask such a private question.
But when you're trying
to put people in jail for private consensual acts, I think it's fair to ask hypocritically if you've committed those very acts.
Because if he has, then he'd have to arrest his wife and put her in jail.
That's true, and himself, too.
Which would be fascinating to have the governor be just like Illinois, you know.
Which is difficult to do.
The governorship in the prison.
But the reason
I guess we're going to have to put like cameras in everyone's bedrooms when you get a marriage license. You're going to have to sign that you won't do that, and then the camera goes in the bedroom. And in the event that the unthinkable occurs, then the police can raid your house and take you away.
Yeah, and frankly, the NSA might enjoy those movies too. I mean, they already have our emails and our phones. Why shouldn't they get private porn from us?
Well, just remember now, guys, I hate to be gross here, but you know, next time you're having sex, if you notice a fly flying around the room, sounds a little
bit
weird, I know. It's a drone.
It's one of those mini drones.
Recording you.
they had it in Transformers too, so hey, you never know.
You never know. Anyway, the point of all this that I was trying to bring up before we descended into the depths was that the Lawrence v. Texas decision just 10 years ago finally said that states cannot put people in jail for private consensual acts among adults. And at that time, that was also a 5-4 decision. And it was done by, I think it may have been 6-3, because I think Justice O'Connor was still there at the time. But the point was, Justice Kennedy wrote the decision, and Kennedy has become sort of this weird leader of gay rights. Not that he is, because obviously the four liberals are solid on this, but as a swing vote, he also voted, he wrote the opinion in Romer v. Evans, which was a Colorado opinion where the cities of Boulder and Denver wanted to give gay citizens equal rights under the law, but the broader state of Colorado, which is more conservative than those two cities, voted on an amendment to take away equal rights, and he said, no, you can't do that. You can't force a city against its will to deny equal rights when they want to do that. And now, of course, he is the swing vote in this. And as Terry was bringing up, Garland, before you lately joined us, is that there are issues in which libertarians and liberals have common ground. Gay rights is one of them. Against the drug war is another one of them. Civil liberties is another one of them. And we should make common cause with libertarians, people like Justice Kennedy, because even though we disagree with them on things like Social Security and education and so forth, there are places we agree and we should make coalitions where we can. I don't know if you have a comment on that, Garland.
I'm a firm believer in this. I had an instructor one time that used to always say, had a saying, no permanent friends when it comes to politics. No permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interests. So I already believe that when it comes to a political position, if there is a group, an organization, or group of people who agrees with what something, even if it's your most staunch adversary on 99% of the issues, if you find an issue that you agree on, you should be willing to work with them on that particular issue. You know, it's about advancing the cause. And then if there's other issues that you disagree with, well, then fight them on the issues that you agree with. And I believe that, whether it's President Obama or whether it's the Tea Party or libertarians, I think it's all the same.
And
it's
Something really important about that is if you find that one or two issues that you agree on and can work together on, sort of like the Gang of Eight is trying to do in many places, if you find that, that's going to lead to some personal association where you just might find some more common ground on other issues you hadn't even thought that you would. And without that process, you're not going to get anywhere.
Well, and again, the point is that we often talk about how awful the Supreme Court is, and I'm one of the ones who does often a lot of the talking. I mean, ever since Bush v. Gore, I've had little faith in that institution, and yet, on certain things, we can get people over. Justice Kennedy came to our side on same-sex marriage, and Chief Justice Roberts came to our side on Obamacare, so we should never stop trying. Unfortunately, all five conservatives stood together, though, when it came to striking down what I would argue is the most important aspect of the Voting Rights Act. Now, they didn't kill the whole act. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 was one of the two pillars of the legislative conclusion to the civil rights movement. When people think of the civil rights movement, I think they often think of the March on Washington and Rosa Parks not getting up from the bus and the March on Selma and all those things, which are very, very important in getting the public together. But when it comes to actual legislation that changed people's lives, the March on Washington wasn't that. That's not to disrespect the March on Washington. It led to the point where we could get the legislation. But the things that actually changed people's lives were the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which said that private institutions like hotels and restaurants couldn't discriminate on the basis of race. That's vital for ending segregation in this country. And the other thing I would argue almost as equally vital, maybe as equally vital, was the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In 1964 in Mississippi, only 6% of blacks voted. And it wasn't because they didn't want to vote. It's because they had things like literacy tests or even more inventive things like count how many jelly beans are in the jar. And if you don't get the number exactly right, you can't vote. Things that they didn't apply to whites because their grandfathers could vote under something called a grandfather clause that people use today, not even knowing its nefarious meaning. But the point is, what the Voting Rights Act of 1965 did is it said, if states have voting practices, things like literacy tests, or today they mostly be photo ID laws is the main way they discriminate. If they have voting practices that discriminate on the basis of race or gender or national origin or things like that, that it's banned. But there are two ways to fight it. The way that still exists in the Voting Rights Act is after they've already prevented you from voting in the election, you can go to a court, you can find a lawyer, you can pay a lot of money and get a nice little tisk-tisk from a federal judge saying that that improper election was wrong, but it stands and all those people stay in office.
And all that takes if you're excluded, you know, from voting. All that takes is a ton of money in your pocket.
Right, exactly. Right. So that still exists, and I'm glad that still exists. It's something. But the more powerful thing was called the preclearance idea, and that was that in states and localities that had a history of discrimination, mostly in the South, but not at all exclusively in the South. At one time, it included Manhattan, which is hardly a Southern state. But Michigan, New Hampshire, Utah, if you discriminated in the past 10 years, then anytime you want to change voting practices, it went up to the Justice Department, and they had to pre-clear that this thing did not discriminate. And if it didn't, you could do your voting change. But if it did, then they could strike it down in advance of the election. And in 2012, it was used 12 times just last year, mostly to strike down unfair photo ID laws. Supreme Court held by 5-4, the five justices, the conservative justice said, you know what, times have changed since the 1960s, and although that's undoubtedly true, basically they said, you know what, yeah, we don't need this anymore.
They believed and pointed out, I believe, you know, that racism is simply gone.
Well,
you know, it just disappeared.
That's kind of what they argued, although I should just say before Garland talks, 2 hours after the decision, Texas went ahead and implemented a discriminatory voting rights law that they knew they couldn't get past the Justice Department. But apparently, 2 hours after racism ended, Texas went ahead and reinstituted its racist voting
rights law. Thank God Perry did not become a real candidate.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is this, and you know, unfortunately, we discuss all the peripheral issues and the fake issues, like, well, you know, whether or not there's discrimination, or whether or not the data is too old, et cetera. When here is the real, this is the truth. This is the meat of this issue. It is impeding them from being able to prevent those, whether they're black students, whoever, whatever group that will vote overwhelmingly Democrat, because it's not just about race. It is also, that's part of it, but it's about winning elections when you don't have the demographic either through ethnicity or through age or various other things. It's about winning elections when you can't win them fair and square, tilting the field. The fact of the matter is, and I think when we argue, debate, or rebut the issues, we should always tell the truth about it. This is about preventing people from voting. It is about doing exactly what the Voting Rights Act was designed to prevent. It's people saying, we don't need the Voting Rights Act anymore because it's stopping us from doing the things that it was designed to stop us from doing, and we'll make up any kind of lie, any kind of, you know, we'll make up anything we've got to make up to get this thing out of the way so we can go back to doing what we were doing before it started. That's the true fact of the matter, and we all know it.
In the Supreme Court ruling on Voting Rights Act, they mentioned the fact
–
they just real quick.
That.
They mentioned the fact that blacks are voting as often as whites in many of these states, and rather than say – that means that the Voting Rights Act is a tremendous success. Let's all praise it and keep it around. They said that means we don't need it anymore. It's kind of like saying crime is way down in this neighborhood since we put in 100,000 cops. So clearly we don't need the cops anymore.
Right. The crucial issue to remember then, as Garner was bringing up, and it's not just, you know, any, it is a specific group that Texas is against, and Texas is a prime example, and that's the Latino vote.
That's true.
And in Texas right now, the Latinos have either succeeded or will succeed in becoming more than 50% of the population. And Texans, white American Texans, are scared to death of that, and they're going to make any manipulation they can to redistrict, to use voting restriction to prevent the Latinos from gaining any more political power in Texas. It's a classic example of why we needed the Voting Rights Act.
And students. Students also. Like I said, race is part of it. Race is something that the voting rights would, the voting rights prevented so that it helped everyone. It helped maintain a level playing field. But this is really, as I said, if you look at some of the laws they passed to prevent students from being able to vote, they couldn't vote where they went to school and they couldn't vote back home. If you look at this, this is simply people saying, we can't win anymore. The black right. people won't vote for us. The Latinos won't vote for us. The young people won't vote for us. The progressives and left-leaning people won't vote for us. We've got a very small group of people that vote for us. We've got to stop these other people from voting. And the Voting Rights Act is preventing us from doing that. We just got to continue to lie and say anything we can say to get this Voting Rights Act out of the way. And now they will go about proving how important it was.
I think also what these joint decisions come in mind is how important it is that progressives stick together. If we have African Americans against same-sex marriage, if we have gay people that don't care about the Voting Rights Act, if we've got people who don't follow the environment or don't care about unions, here's the thing: in many aspects of the progressive coalition, if alone, they are a minority. That's why we call them minorities. They're not in the majorities. The majority of Americans are not African American. The majority of Americans are not gay. The majority of Americans are not in unions, but we have strength. We have strength where we stick together. And it was just very sad to me that on this extremely happy day, I remember thinking on Wednesday, this very, very happy day, we're finally, at least in 13 states in D.C., gay couples have equal rights under the law. Not still in my home state of Virginia, but where I sit now in D.C. and in Maryland. So it's coming. At the same day, I was saddened to think that the Voting Rights Act would no longer be enforced, and thinking about what I could do as a progressive to work to repass another Voting Rights Act, which isn't easy to do, particularly when they won't let us vote to get the representatives in. What one other thing which we should remember, the only reason the House of Representatives is controlled by the Republican Party is because of gerrymandering. The majority of the American people voted for Democrats in the last election in the House of Representatives. It's only because of the way they drew the lines that we even have a Republican House. With voting restrictions that are going to come in place immediately upon this law, it's going to be really, really hard to elect the representatives we need to change the law. It reminds me of 2000, Bush v. Gore. What they did is the justices chose the president, and then the president appoints new justices. People like Alito and Chief Justice Roberts were appointed by a president that was appointed by a Supreme Court that was appointed by a president. And suddenly the voters have no say whatsoever. So it's going to be even harder.
The ramifications of this are really, really profound and frightening, because what's going to happen is you're going to have voting restriction laws passed that will happen. This all happens before you can do anything about it.
Right.
You used to be able to do something before it happened. But this is also going to affect the states now that are trying to have districts, trying to have their electoral college, divided up by districts that they've already gerrymandered, so that they can therefore never have, total electoral college for many particular or electors from any particular state voting unanimously, and therefore, even though you've got small little districts out in the middle of Kansas, they're going to have the same power to vote, thereby splitting the electoral vote and thereby again preserving those frightened conservatives.
Well, even worse than that, Terry, as an example,
how can it get worse?
what's worse about what you were just saying is this: what you'll have as an example, Virginia. You will have an instance where the Democrats, such as Hillary, Obama won Virginia. He won the popular vote. He got the electoral votes. Had they divided the electoral votes based on district as they would like to do now, Obama would have won Virginia and Romney would have gotten more than twice as many electoral votes because they gerrymandered the districts.
Yes.
And there's more Republican districts. So what will happen is they'll say to the Democrat, congratulations, you got 14 million more votes than the Republicans, which means you just lost the election. And democracy itself is dead.
That really can happen. I mean, it really can happen.
Well, Virginia actually tried to do that. And in fact, the only reason it didn't happen is because the Virginia Senate is currently 2020, which is another reminder to get out and vote this November, because we do have Right now, a Republican governor of Virginia. The House is two-thirds Republican. And again, in a state that voted for Obama twice. And the other thing that you should point out is Virginia has 11 congressional seats. Three are controlled by Democrats. Eight are controlled by Republicans in a state that voted some 52% for a Democratic president. So you could see how it would be six Democrats and five Republicans, maybe even six Republicans and five Democrats, but 8-3, no, because they packed all the Democrats in some districts, and then they made sure that the other districts are a majority Republican. It's called gerrymandering.
This is happening or can happen in states all over the country.
Happening in Pennsylvania, happening in Ohio, happening in Michigan, happening in Florida.
Well, Mark, I'd like to comment on one of the points you made about the importance of coalition.
Yeah.
You know, as a black person, there's nothing I hate worse than to hear any black person join in the conservative xenophobia about Latino people taking their jobs.
Yeah.
I hate to hear that. Let me tell you a quick anecdote. My mother, who of course was black, when she was a young woman many years ago, back in the 30s or 40s, whatever. One of the things that she did, due to, of course, the racism at that time as a teenager, was she would wait on the side. There was an area where you could stand on the side of the road, just as a lot of undocumented workers do now. Stand on the side of the road, and the farm trucks would come, and they would pick you up, and they would take you out to work on the farm all day, and at the end of the day, they would pay you, you know, X amount of dollars in cash, just as a lot of undocumented do today. That happens a lot today in construction and lawn work, et cetera. By the time my mother died, she was a very successful businesswoman, So I know that these people who are out there many times undocumented, working for days work for days cash pay, if given the opportunity, can be very successful people and contribute to this to our economy. And it just so and it happens as a black person that many of us or our parents and grandparents were in exactly the same shoes as the undocumented people workers now, because we weren't really American citizens because we had no rights under the Constitution back then.
In the same shoes as Latinos are now.
My great grandparents were.
Xenophobia.
100 years ago, when my great grandparents, I know that my great grandfather came to this country a little more than 100 years ago, and he had $20 to his name. That's all he had. That was his net wealth total. And of course, he sewed women's dresses and then went door to door as a door to door salesman, and eventually it did okay. I mean, that's the American dream. And this idea that we're going to shut the doors, even though, we all came here either as immigrants or on slave ships. But unless you're one of the 2% of this country that's actually Native American, and then you've got a real complaint. If you're Native American, you've got a legitimate gripe about all these other people coming in. But the other 98%.
You've got a legitimate gripe there, too. And it's worth pointing out that Native Americans are still being discriminated
against. Well, that's true.
Horribly.
That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely so. In fact, we need to do a whole show on that soon.
We do.
And I will do that. But the point is, 98% of us had ancestors that came from some other land to live the American dream. And this idea that we're going to shut the door to the current mix of immigrants. And I got to tell you something, the vast, vast, vast majority of new immigrants, many of them are from Mexico, though not exclusively. We got people from all over the world that come here. The vast, vast majority of them want to make life better for their families, do not commit crimes, try their best to succeed, and generally do achieve some measure of success. Usually the next generation speaks English fluently. They go to our schools. They're some of our brightest minds. This idea that somehow our ancestors were cool enough to make it, but the next generation isn't, it's hard to imagine people even think that way. But of course,
even if you're worried about the Mexicans, you know, and so they're going to build a 700-mile fence. I mean, good.
No, but piranhas, don't forget the piranhas.
Yeah.
You need piranhas.
You know, I mean, to give you one, the people that try to immigrate are usually courageous people to begin with. Desperate and or courageous. And the majority, something like 80% of the women who try to immigrate from Mexico or South America, 80% of them are raped during the process.
Wow.
80%.
I hadn't heard that statistic.
Yeah, but I can believe it because they can't go to the police.
They can't go to the police.
Awfully
they have no legal protection. They have no power whatsoever. They have to sell everything they've got to get a little bit of money to buy some lousy agent that's supposedly going to take them across the border or whatever.
Coyotes, they call them.
They're raped.
So this week.
Most women now who can afford it, who actually are trying to immigrate legally or illegally or, you know, in South America, will take birth control pills strictly because of that.
Wow.
It's that.
Well, the thing is that they are. and even when they get over here, the undocumented immigrant community is very much abused by people. They are robbed. They are a lot of bad things happen to them because the people of, you know, nefarious intent know they can't call the police.
Right.
And they're taken advantage of horribly.
That's exactly
right. To give you an example of that to solidify, because Texas is probably the worst state in the union. I used to live in Houston, and I had a good friend who was a news reporter for the Houston Chronicle.
Why am I not surprised that you used to live in the worst state in the union, Terry? What is it with you? You're just a troublemaker wherever you go. All right, go ahead.
They just run me out of town, you know, frequently. But in Texas, at that time, this was in the mid-70s, the Houston police would never investigate a black murder.
Yeah.
They simply didn't do it. And
the victim was black.
Never report it.
Right.
They didn't give a damn.
Well, and when you don't have the basic human rights, the basic equal rights under the law to be protected from violence would be one of them, or to have the right to vote or any equal rights under the law, then you're subject to mistreatment. I mean, there's no question about it.
And that's why I always say, really, before the civil rights, and some could argue a bill, and some could argue before, black people were not American citizens, because American citizens had protections under the Constitution, which black people didn't have, so they weren't American citizens. Therefore, black people in America should be very supportive of undocumented immigrants, and not buy into the xenophobia, and not buy into the, you know, it's like when the Republican tells the poor or working class white people, these black people are taking your jobs or taking it. It's the same exact game to get people who all have the same interest, the same economic and social interest, that all need the same thing, black, white, Latino, etc., to get them arguing amongst each other. It's a rich guy standing there with nine out of 10 cookies saying to you, that guy's trying to take part of your cookie.
Yeah, it's all about divide and conquer. So here we have this week, we have the and a lot of it was lost in the you know, the news about the Supreme Court decisions. But we had the Senate of the United States vote 68-32, pretty astounding, more than 2/3 vote, to have a bill to allow those undocumented immigrants in the United States to obtain citizenship in 13 years, which is
it's pretty
long time, after there's tremendous border security fences. And I don't know if piranhas were there, but I wouldn't be surprised if they are, you know, barbed wire, who knows what. And they're saying already that it's dead on arrival in the Republican-controlled House. And I have to tell you this, and Garland wanted to bet me. I wouldn't take that $1 bet, by the way, because I tend to win my $1 bets with Terry, and I don't want to ruin my
well, you know, I mean, this is one of the reasons that I'm bankrupt now.
I don't want to ruin my winning streak here, so I'm not going to take that bet with you, Garland. But Garland thinks and has said, and I fear he's right, that the immigration bill will not pass the House. But I have to tell you this. The Republicans,
they're not even going
to
consider it.
Well, the Republicans, if they do not consider the bill in the House, are going to cut off their nose to spite their face, because this will – Latinos were a very important margin of victory for Democrats in 2012, and that margin will grow even more, until finally the Republicans don't want to help Latinos. They don't want to give immigrants an equal chance in society, but they're going to be forced to, because the votes are there. As long as they allow them to vote and don't use tricky ways like Texas is trying to keep them from voting, the votes are there. And in democracy, eventually the Republicans are going to have to learn this is just not the way to treat people.
And I think now, though, they think, based on the civil rights, based on the Supreme Court bill, I mean, excuse me, the Supreme Court finding, I think they believe that, yeah, we'll never get their votes. But now they're not going to be able to vote because we can get them out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is a victory for the Republicans. This is a victory for the racists, because they can manipulate things in the next few years that by the time we get to a presidential election or whatever, they will have the Latino votes limited. They will have the black votes limited. They will have the student votes limited, all because of this. And the immigration bill, therefore, will not pass. And that, you know, Boehner has already said they're not even going to consider the House version.
Well, let's end this segment then with a call to action, because the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, was just this year in 2013. The 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act will be next year. Excuse me, the Civil Rights Act will be next year. The 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act will be the year following, in 2015. And those acts only occurred because of activism. They only occurred because hundreds of thousands of people marched in the streets, because they marched across the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, because there was a march on Washington, because Rosa Parks wouldn't get up from her seat, because of the Montgomery bus boycott. That's why they happened. And also, I think it's true that activism today, let's give gay rights activists some credit, because of activism, because of marches. I got to tell you, I helped found Marriage Equality California. I started the Valentine's Day protests where we tried to get married every Valentine's Day. It's because of activism by gay rights activists that we have the success we have today. So let us remember that activism works, that acts come from activism, and let's try to remind people that we can march on Washington yet again. I'd like to see another march on Washington on the 50th anniversary, maybe of the Civil Rights Act, or if we have to, I don't want to wait till 2015, but
no,
the Voting Rights Act.
That long.
But we need another march on Washington, and it has to be massive, and it has to be hundreds of thousands of people. It has to be larger than Martin Luther King's March on Washington, and a march for voting rights, saying that racism has no place in America, and we need to pass yet another Voting Rights Act. And you know what? The Supreme Court did not want to discriminate among the states. They didn't want to say that Alabama is more racist than Massachusetts, even though Alabama is more racist than Massachusetts. They didn't want to say that. So there's an easy answer to that question. Simply apply the preclearance Section 5 process to all states and localities. That way, even though Vermont isn't racist, so what? Vermont's not going to pass a racist law. They don't have to worry about preclearance. If they don't like that some states were called out, if that looked bad, there's a very simple solution. Just apply it to all the states, all the localities in the United States, and then we don't have to worry about, you know, calling the racists out. How about that, gentlemen? March on Washington for voting rights. Apply Section 5 across the country. What about it?
It needs that kind of political power and that people power. It really does, because this is crucial. This is not just a simple law that's been overturned. This plus the redistricting decisions is absolutely crucial to our liberty. It truly, truly is.
So, Garland, you got 200,000 friends that you can bring to Washington in a few months?
Well, you two are about it, tell you the truth. I got two. And you guys are, I don't even know if you like me anymore.
Well, not when you're late every day. I mean, come on.
We'll march with you.
Well, and you know, here's the thing that I think is going to be really something to watch. Because women make up half of this, a little more than half of the country, half of the voters.
Right.
That when the first, and you know, let's face it, it's pretty obvious Hillary's going to run. That when the first woman runs, the most effective and the largest effort to steal the election in history will coincide with the first woman running, and I think a lot of women will look at it and say, geez, 44 guys win, and when the first woman runs, you know, you guys come out here and do everything you can to steal the election from a woman. Even a black guy won.
Yeah. We'll see.
And I think women are going to be really pissed about that.
I mean, the Republicans, conservatives are really frightened what has happened with Obama being president with a power and respect that someone like Hillary Clinton has. They are scared. The old good old boys are really scared, and they're going to do everything dirty, everything legally they can to prevent the average citizen from being involved in the process.
Well, we'll see, because women's rights issues are very important, particularly, again, I think every broadcast we should mention the Virginia election, because so much of We Act Radio is heard in Northern Virginia. But, of course, women's rights issues are a big one, particularly because one of the things that the Virginia legislature tried to do and was only stopped because, frankly, of the guy running for lieutenant governor of Virginia, Senator Ralph Northam, was to force women to be, I don't know how the word is, raped, to force them to have transvaginal ultrasound. If they wanted an abortion, they had to be raped by an instrument. And I don't care that it's in a doctor's hands. They didn't think it was invasive to forcibly insert instruments inside women. But Democrats understood that was invasive, and they stopped it. And I got to tell you something. If Republicans get one more Senate seat, that's all they need to forcibly require all women seeking abortions in Virginia to be raped yet again, to use this transvaginal ultrasound.
Abused.
Yeah, whatever word you want to use. All right, we got to take a break because when we come back, Terry wants to talk trash, and I'm not sure why he's such a trash talker, but we'll find out right after the break. If you want to call in, it's 202-889-9797. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine here with
Terry
Garland Nixon.
And they spoke at the same time. I always like to do that. Terry DeKester and Garland Nixon. It's one of the little games I play on these two gentlemen here.
It hurts.
All right, Terry DeKester, I guess that's why you're talking trash, right?
I am.
Because I abuse you so much. You know,
there's some real big – this is a reality check for everybody listening, for the whole darn world. You know, and that's one of the problems in our country. Americans don't want to space reality any more than any other group of people. They just want to, use ideology to describe everything that happens in their life. The most important thing Americans and all people need to realize now is that everything is, always has been, but really now is interconnected. And what happens here matters to what happens there, and what happens in China matters what happens to here, and what happens in your neighborhood matters to somebody living in some other state. It all is connected. Our number one export, guys, our number one export is garbage.
Why am I not surprised? I think of all that I throw away, and then I've seen other people throw away.
Yeah, that is our number one export. This is huge economically. Most of it, 75% of the aluminum of the United States goes to China. 60% of the scrap paper goes to China. 50% of its plastic goes to China. China has just now said, enough. Forget about it.
We pay them for it, don't we? We pay them to take our garbage.
Yeah.
And they don't want our money. It's not enough?
They use it for resources. And our garbage, unfortunately, is dirty. It's not clean to standards that it should be. So you can use plastics in one area and aluminum in another area, et cetera. But they are therefore have this whole policy called the Green Fence. And they are cutting out by now already 20% of the garbage that we ship there. We have no other place to ship it.
Well, my understanding is that we're going to poorer countries than China. For example, Bangladesh, one of the poorest countries on earth, is where we send some of our worst garbage, some of our toxic things and so forth, because we don't care about the people of Bangladesh, and they can handle it and die and get disease, and we don't have to worry about it because they're from Bangladesh.
It's a classic example of exploiting poorer people. That's what it's really about on the big scale. And China now has made enough economic process that said, nuts, we're not going to take this anymore.
Well,
go ahead, Garland.
This is huge. It's
what we have been doing here. You know, it's a broader version of what we've been doing here, which only makes sense as the globe gets smaller. And that is for years. If you look at the toxic waste dumps and places like that, they're always in the poorest areas. They're in minority areas. They're out in the rural areas where people don't have the political and financial resources to stop it or fight it. Or oftentimes, they don't even know these things are there until they start getting sick from, you know, methyl ethyl horrible or whatever. So we've been doing that here for many, many years to our poor and rural citizens. And so it only makes sense that we would broaden it out and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, why not find people that are even poorer and have even less financial and political power, and we'll dump it on them.
But here, Terry, here's what I don't understand. So China is having this green initiative. They're taking 20% less garbage from the United States, and yet Chinese cities are more polluted than our cities. You look at,
but they're changing that.
Are they? Are they getting better in that regard?
Particularly their new president, that's his correct title, you know, what's his name? It's Z.
I think it's
Chi. It's pronounced.
I think it's Chi.
Yeah, I mean, he has made it a big, big, big issue for his presidency on just cleaning up the environment in every way. And this is not just toxic materials and not just garbage like we think of in our own home. This is waste products. This is recyclable waste products. So this is a money issue. These are the waste products that are used in creating other products that are then sold back to United States.
Well, because we do get a lot of our products from China.
So
does this make us have to actually clean up our act? Pardon the intended pun. I mean,
everybody in this world sooner or later is going to have to take responsibility for what they do in their neighborhood and what they do, period. The average American right now, per capita American, not average, the per capita American disposes of 7 pounds of trash a day.
7 pounds a day?
Yeah. Now multiply.
I don't think I'm that bad.
50 million times 365 days a year. You got a heck of a lot of trash.
7 pounds a day? Really?
Yeah.
Does that include my recyclables? I don't think I throw out 7 pounds a day. Maybe I need to weigh my trash.
This is per capita.
Keep in mind,
because I feel like you're personally blaming me, Terry, and you know, and it may well be true, but I want to measure that trash before I.
Yeah, but it's an economic issue, because what you're selling actually these days is you're not selling just garbage. You're selling resources.
Right.
This is what it's about. And China is using them for resources. They're just saying, we're going to have a higher quality of resources. We're not going to take your dirty trash anymore.
Go ahead, Garland. I mean, Garland had something to say. Go ahead, Garland.
I was going to say, Mark, it's like, you know, when in law enforcement, the old uniform UCR uniform crime report, when they say things like, you know, there's a murder in, you know, in this, you know, in this part of the country every hour. And people say, really, every 60 minutes? No, there are 24 murders in a day. They may all be between 11 and 12, but we average them out in the uniform crime report and say there's a murder every hour because that's the way it works out. So that doesn't mean that Mark...
Thank you, Garland. Thank you. Thank you for protecting me. I'm not as dirty as people think I am. I'm just saying that.
300 million times seven, that's how many pounds of trash. So Terry and I probably you do enough for 1.5 people, and so you don't do any trash.
Yeah, I blame the infants of the world. I think it's dirty diapers.
I think,
you know, and, you know, you guys are just not taking this seriously. Now, you know, I always give your topics just the utmost seriousness. I never
You have no question there, Terry.
Well, you're talking trash, Terry. Why are we going to be serious about that? Hey, you know what? One thing, people always talk about how they can't believe that people pay for bottled water. That 20 years ago, they said, I got this idea. I'll put water in bottles and sell it. Everyone laughed. You know, water's free. Or, you know, I mean, whatever. What do I pay my water bill? $5 for 100,000 gallons, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So they'll never work. What you're selling, remember, when you sell bottled water, it ain't the water. The water's cheap. It's the plastic. It's the fact that people carry it around. And I have no doubt that bottled water, all that, I mean, all it is plastic, because you could get water from a hose practically anywhere.
Let me give you just how this is.
If that plastic were biodegradable, I mean, rather if we sell, I don't know, some kind of biodegradable water bottles, that then you could have the convenience of carrying the water around, but not have all that plastic and landfill.
You can buy yourself a water bottle and fill it up, you know.
Several times, exactly. Yeah. They were called thermoses back in, well, Terry's day.
Well, the other part of it is this.
Let me point out how serious this is, guys. Scrap is America's top export to China by value, worth $11.3 billion.
Wait, worth? They don't pay us for it. We pay them to take it, right?
No.
They pay us for it?
You're talking about scrap here. Scrap.
Oh, scrap metal. Okay, things like that. Okay.
Yeah, we would normally just put in a landfill. But it's much more profitable to sell it to China. And we haven't got the landfills. That is going to be cut. That $11.3 billion of business is going to be cut by 20%.
Because, you know, it's not worth it.
It's a huge export profit-making thing because of our stupidity over the years is going to be a 20% slash. Hmm. That's a huge slash. This is an economic issue, not just a garbage issue.
Yeah.
And to give you an example, we haven't dealt with recycling in this country in an intelligent way. It's cheaper to ship a 40-foot container full of iron scrap from Los Angeles to China than it is to send it by train from Los Angeles to Chicago.
Yeah, well.
And even if it gets to Chicago,
people don't want
that
trash
there that can use it. So we've been selling our trash, making money on our trash, making it a part of our economy with no regard for the economic consequences or environmental consequences elsewhere. China and other countries have built the industries to recycle the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're making money because they're selling it back to us, and we are now going to lose 20% of that $11.3 billion worth of exports.
Not to mention,
it's a huge issue.
We're going to have, environmentally, we're going to have all these, you know, billions of pounds of trash that we have to deal with. And, it's indicative of our existence on this planet. I mean, if you think about it, our waste products come out of cars and come out of coal-fired plants. So all the waste products now, our waste products are changing our atmosphere. But our waste products, these things that we're burying, they go into our groundwater. We're poisoning ourselves all over the planet with no regard for our future generations whatsoever.
Right, and all we've done to deal with it is find a way to make a buck off of it by exporting it to some other country that needs the plastic to, you know, recycle more than we do, instead of dealing with the issue, as you brought up just a moment ago, Mark, that, you know, water bottles are probably the stupidest thing that's ever been invented.
Well, here's the other end of it, though, and that's this. If you have a petroleum company and they keep recycling the same plastic all over and over again, they have no reason to buy your petroleum sludge so they can make new plastic. So the fact of the matter is, to a lot of very, very powerful corporations that control the petroleum sludge that they make plastic out of, they have an incentive to fight against any efforts, any really serious efforts to recycle plastic.
And this goes back to I think where we began the discussion, which was making coalitions with people that may not agree with us on other things. The Christian right, God knows, I disagree with them on many, many things, including on the fact that they want to make me second-class citizens. But one of the things that they're good at and we can join with them on is environmentalism. I think you'll find a surprising amount of even social conservatives don't believe in polluting our rivers, our air. It's God's earth, right? I mean, and the mountains and the waters and the coal companies that are blowing up mountains in West Virginia and putting all that arsenic and cadmium and so forth, poisonous metals, into our rivers. So bringing back to where I began this discussion, in looking for allies wherever we can, and the environmental movement cuts a different swath of people. And I think that you'll find the vast majority of Americans, liberals and conservatives and libertarians, 60-70% want clean water, want clean air, don't want all this stuff. You know, the Keystone Pipeline, if we can make clear that what it can destroy is that wonderful aquifer under Nebraska and Kansas that grows the corn, you know, the breadbasket of the world, wheat and so forth, environmentalism is another way we can cut across coalitions and end a lot of this divide in America.
And never remember that that Keystone Pipeline is going to exist for one word, that one reason, and that's to take the oil, the crude, right down to the Koch brothers facility in Texas. That's the purpose of it.
What little of it that doesn't actually flow
yeah.
through some crack and completely engulf some town full of innocent people.
And also, just real quickly, guys, I know we're running out of time. People have got to realize that President Obama gave this incredible speech about climate change and about carbon, et cetera, that most of the media has been ignoring because of partially the Supreme Court decisions, et cetera, et cetera. But that is really a significant speech and significant action that he is trying to take. The Republicans will try to defund it. But it's crucial to support Obama and what he's trying to do now in terms of the environment.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for another terrific Raucous Caucus. We are here every Sunday on WEAC Radio, 1480 a.m. from 12
to 1. And don't let them outlaw my marriage.
To 1. And I assure you, Terry, your marriage has lasted 312 years. Nothing's going to stop it now.
Good.
And give Jim my best and happy anniversary to you. Terry, if they want to find you, how can they find you?
Doctor of Democracy at AOL.com.
Fair enough. Garland?
Leavenworth Prison.
Not the old address.
Not yet, Garland. They haven't caught you yet, okay?
Yeah, I'll say. Okay. GarlandN@gmail.com. GarlandN@gmail.com. Or, at Garland Nixon or on Facebook, Garland Nixon.
Terrific. And I, of course, am at Mark Levine Talk. That's my Twitter address. My website is MarkLevineTalk.com. And coming up on MarkLevineTalk.com is the Inside Scoop. We're going to go into detail into all of these Supreme Court decisions and tell you exactly what they said, what they mean for the future. So please hang on and join the Inside Scoop coming up right after this.
Don't forget the garbage.
And don't forget Terry's garbage.
Thank you.
Bye.